Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Segar, joined by a special guest in today's show, Stephen Reed of Stampede Blue. How are you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing well today, Evan. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks again for coming on. Appreciate the time as always, man. And we're going to go into a little bit in depth about free agency here. I know the COVID-19 coronavirus sort of taken over the sports world the last week or so. We're going to try to stay on topic as much as we can today, talking about the Colts and free agency because that's still scheduled to start on Monday, but let's start off with some just overall thoughts, Stephen, of the Colts offseason, because I haven't had a chance to have him on the show just yet, but how important this offseason is for this Colts team, especially this regime?
Yeah, I think this is maybe the most consequential offseason for Chris Ballard thus far. It's, you know, this is the first time he's coming in, as we all know, without a franchise quarterback kind of in the pocket. You had the situation with Anthony Costanzo potentially retiring. Obviously, the Colts got great news that he'll be coming back, although rumors are that it's going to be a year-to-year deal. So looks like they still may need to look at finding a replacement for him. But again, the most important position on the field is a quarterback, and this is going to be the first year they're really kind of looking towards that. I'd say this is one of the most consequential off seasons that they've had as a franchise, or at least under the Ballard regime.
From a fan's perspective, Stephen, I imagine just over the last 20 years, especially for, I mean, even me including this, like we have Peyton Manning, they've had Andrew Luck. I know they've had maybe Curtis Painter sprinkled in there for a year. We've had Jacoby Brissett as well. But doesn't it feel weird at this point, like not having like to fall back on a franchise quarterback where like the Colts are in? Like it seems like a completely new era at this point.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where you're kind of feeling how I bet a lot of other football, like the majority of other football franchises outside of New England have felt over the past, 20 years. It's really a unique territory for Colts fans, and it really is going to test the mettle of the front office and where they're looking to go.
Yeah, definitely agree with you. We're going to hit on some mailbag questions throughout the show, Stephen, and then we're going to dive into some free agency thoughts, what we might do here as the legal tampering period opens on Monday at 9 o'clock West Coast time, noon Eastern time. So it's going to be a very fun Monday, hopefully. But let's dive in now to our first question here for Stephen from Lucas Robbins. And he asked for you, Stephen, would you rather beat the Patriots without Brady or have Tom Brady sign the Colts and beat the Patriots?
I'd rather beat the Patriots. I'd rather beat the Patriots without Brady because I don't really care for Brady as a quarterback. In the past few years, he's steadily declined. And so, if the Colts do end up signing Brady and beating the Patriots, then at that point, I think they would have to be playing in the playoffs. So that would obviously be a coup. But at the same time, I'm real hesitant on Tom Brady as a bridge quarterback because that's basically all he'd be. I think that answered the question, right?
Yeah. And I'm right there with you, Stephen, just as far as – if he did sign Tom Brady, kind of kicking the can on the road for another year or two, I'd be surprised if they signed a Brady that they would draft a quarterback 13. Maybe I'm wrong there, but you're kind of going all in on a two-year push with Tom Brady for a Super Bowl or multiple at that. And I just don't see Tom Brady signing on the dotted line or at the Colts. But next one here for you, Steven, would you rather trade picks 34 or 44 plus 75 to the Jaguars for Yannick Ngakoue in a sign-and-trade or franchise tag-and-trade, or would you rather give them cap relief and get off Nick Foles for them for a cheaper price?
All right, so here there's been different ways around this because Yannick Ngakoue is definitely the elite pass rusher. If you're telling me I can get Yannick Ngakoue for pick 44, or are you telling me I have to have 34, 44, and 75?
Probably most realistically, we can just do it in this hypothetical, 34 plus 75.
I think I'd have a hard time giving up two draft picks for, especially 34. I think I'd obviously be more palatable to give up 44. I think the more likely scenario in this case would be the Colts to, or my personal opinion would be to take Nick Foles, because at that point, Jacksonville is likely to give you a pick back, similar to what happened with Houston and Cleveland in the Brock Osweiler situation. And so if that's what's going to happen, if I'm going to take Nick Foles' contract and bring back, say, pick 42, that second round pick from the Jaguars, which is the same pick that, or a similar pick to what Houston gave to Cleveland in that trade, then I'd look to make that move. If I have to give up a pick for Nick Foles, then I'm making the Yannick Ngakoue trade all day.
Speaking of Foles for a second here, Steven, he's making around the same money as Jacoby, I believe, next couple of years. He's around $15, $16 million annually. Do you think that actually – we'll dive into this obviously more later on the show, but do you think maybe trading for Foles and getting back, let's say, a fourth-round pick with Foles makes more sense for this team just in the salary cap terms instead of maybe signing Philip Rivers to a $25 million year contract if they are intending to keep Jacoby around either way?
Yeah, I think that trading for Nick Foles makes a lot of sense for a couple of reasons. First off, you get a guy that's familiar with Frank Reich's system, which I think is huge. So you don't have the learning time that you'd have to have with, like, say, for instance, like the first question with the Tom Brady. You know, you'd obviously be able to work with that with Philip Rivers too, and being able to bring him in. So that may not be as big of an issue. Now, the other thing to consider in this is if you trade for Nick Foles, then that still opens up the Colts to receive a compensatory pick. For if, say, an Eric Ebron or a Devin Funchess signs a big deal elsewhere and the Colts don't sign any big-name free agents. If you sign a guy like a Phillip Rivers or a Tom Brady to a huge contract, you're giving up that opportunity to get those compensatory picks. This year is probably the year, though, that I would see Ballard just kind of throw his hands up in the air and say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and spend some money in free agency because, like I mentioned, I think the only major players that they're going to have in free agency for the Colts are Eric Ebron, Devin Funchess, and Jabal Sheard. Those are likely to be the only ones that are going to command a big enough salary to warrant getting or returning a compensatory pick.
Who do you think wins that training camp battle, hypothetically, Steve, between Foles and Jacoby Brissett? Because I kind of honestly would lean Foles there.
Foles. I don't even think that it's – you can tell by how quick I answered that question. I think that it's Foles that wins that competition. I think that Foles is a better overall quarterback, and I think he's a better quarterback for Frank Reich's system. Because as a reminder, Jacoby Brissett was brought in that year that Andrew Luck was hurt, and that was, what, Pagano's first year, right?
Yeah, I think that's
for Pagano's last year. Yep. So Jacoby Brissett was never in Frank Reich's system prior, and it was just kind of a stopgap. We've got to get a guy at this point. So they brought in Jacoby Brissett. He played admirably, played as well as you kind of would expect a guy with 3 days to learn a playbook. And then came into Frank Reich's system, 2 years ago and got to learn a bit, but he never really played. And then this past year, He got to take all the first team snaps, but I think that there was a difference in the way that he kind of prepared for the season because he came to the season thinking he was a backup and maybe he wasn't as ready as we had hoped. Obviously there were some shortcomings in that. I can tell you that I've said on the podcast that I do with my friend Jared Malott, I started bringing up raising flags on Jacoby Brissett after the Oakland game. And I said, hey, look, there's some issues here that might be problems down the road. And it ended up being a problem. So I think that Nick Foles is probably going to be a better option. If those were in our hypothetical world and those were the only two guys we're considering right now, I think it would be Foles.
Yeah, I would lean Foles pretty easily there. I know they'd probably say it'd be an open battle for throughout training camp there, but I think Foles pretty easily would go ahead and take that spot from Jacoby there. But next question on the list here is once more from Lucas, and he asked us about if the Colts get a Ryan Tannehill route, for instance, and let's say they bring in a veteran quarterback off free agency, a guy who didn't work out in his first team, and maybe the Colts think, hey, we can try to rebuild this guy's image, maybe have him beat out Jacoby Brissett, or if Jacoby gets hurt or he does bad in the first part of the season, he can come in and be our new Ryan Tannehill. And Lucas asked, who would you prefer in this type of Tannehill scenario, Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota?
I kind of figured that was where that was going. Both of them have their benefits and drawbacks. I think probably in Reich's system, I'd probably lean towards Jameis just because I feel like he can be a little bit more accurate than Marcus Mariota. Now, coming out in their draft class, I like Marcus Mariota better than I like Jameis Winston. Now, Jameis Winston in Bruce Arians' offense threw a lot of interceptions, but pretty much every quarterback in Bruce Arians' offense, their first year throws a lot of interceptions, and they bring it down as it comes back. I think that Winston's probably a little bit more accurate. I worry about Mariota and being able to stay healthy. Now with the Colts offensive line, he might not take the hits that he did with Tennessee. But at the same time, you worry about his decision-making on the fly. I'd probably lean Jameis, but I wouldn't be – if they decided to go that third-tier quarterback and make that the bridge, at that point, I think they should just keep Jacoby Brissett and not worry about it and draft a guy.
Yeah, I would agree there. If they went that route, I'd actually go Marcus Mariota just because I feel like a mobile quarterback and frame rate system intrigues me a lot. Maybe he could be a more improved version of what we saw when he led the Titans to the wild card game a couple years ago. If he could be more like that, maybe more consistent. Mariota really intrigues me as far as that goes. And I don't know if it makes a lot of sense to bring him in. He'd definitely be a lower tier option than what I think a lot of other Colts fans are hoping for as far as the quarterback situation goes. But I think either one of those makes sense in a Tannehill type situation. But maybe a couple more questions here. Oh, go ahead, Steven. Okay.
I was going to say, and to go off that, like I can see Mariota being an option too in that one scenario. It also goes off of what Chris Ballard said at the combine and in his press conference. He talked about escapability of quarterbacks being key, and that mobile quarterbacks are starting to come of age in the NFL. So it could be something. Frank Reich's one of those coaches that was able to develop the system to fit the strengths of the players that he had. So, either one of those, I'd be fine with, but I'd probably prefer to stick with Jacoby.
Next one here for you, Steven, and it's from Jaleel. And it's a really – I'm glad he brought this one up because I feel like we haven't brought this up on the show yet, and I feel like it's a good time to talk about because Darius Leonard was on Good Morning Football, I believe, or he was on the PFF podcast, one of those two. And he gave support to Jacoby Brissett as far as – I think he was kind of blamed too much. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he was pretty much saying – without the loss of weapons he had with T.Y. missing a lot of time, Funchess obviously missing the whole season, a lot of guys would be in the situation Jacoby was without his top weapons, without being thrust in the situation he was. And Julio's asking here, do you think other players feel the same way about Jacoby, or is this all just about supporting who's already in place? Because I think it's a mix of both, honestly, but I feel like obviously you're not going to hear Darius Leonard come out in the media, Steven, and say, Jacoby Brissett's a horrible quarterback. Like, he's not the guy I want to be our future. He's not going to say that.
No. And I don't think anybody's going to say that publicly. I'd be remiss to say that anybody would say it privately. And I think if people were being just dead truthfully honest, they might say, hey, you know what, I've got some concerns. But I think bringing up the weapons is definitely something to consider. It's something that Chris Ballard and Frank Reich brought up in their combine press conferences. Talking about the injuries to different positions. So it's something that obviously goes around the building there. And it's something that everybody really needs to take into account. But at the same time, Jacoby Brissett didn't grow from like week one to week 17. Like, he was the same quarterback that was the entire time. Yeah, he got hurt. But Chris Ballard said in his press conference, they didn't really take the injury into concern when they were talking about judging him on the last part of the season. So it's one of those things where I think privately, if you had somebody and you gave them like truth serum, we want to go a Harry Potter reference and Veritas serum, we'll sit there and they'll say, yeah, okay, maybe he's not the guy. But I think if you just ask them their dead set opinion, I think they'll probably say the same thing. Now, whether that's true or not, don't know. I think they're probably just trying to toe the company line on it. Because like I said, he struggled a lot. It was really obvious too.
This is an interesting one, kind of the opposite of what we were just hitting on there, Steven. This is from Jeffrey, and he asks, what's wrong with keeping Jacoby Brissett as a starting quarterback for the long term and using our picks wisely in the first few rounds? If we would have had won two or three of those games and we lost due to kicking, nobody would even have second-guessing this. I disagree with that because I think Jacoby, even if they would have won these games, would have still been in question. We saw Kansas City do what they did with Alex Smith. They won 10 or 11 games, and the next year drafted Patrick Mahomes in the first round, the top 10, trade up for him. What's your thoughts on Jeffrey's assessment there that let's say we commit to Jacoby Brissett and try to build this thing around him?
I think that that's – I don't think that's a great idea. And it's for the same reasons that we've been talking about is Jacoby Brissett's limited as a quarterback. And Chris Ballard, from the moment he came into the building, has said that he wants to improve competition at every position. And so if they had an opportunity to provide competition, say at 13 or 34 or 44, to bring in a quarterback that could arguably be an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett, and they didn't do it to address another position, it really, as we all know, it depends on what's available in the draft. But at the same time, I would have a hard time believing that they feel comfortable moving forward with Jacoby Brissett. And that can go to all the rumors that you hear about from the combine. Like, you heard Philip Rivers was the guy. You heard Tom Brady, Marcus Mariota, Andy Dalton, Mitch Trubisky, like, trades for everybody. And you heard the whole gambit of guys being options for the Colts. If the Colts were really happy with Jacoby Brissett, that would have gotten out. And you wouldn't have heard those rumors as much. So I think that it's a wise decision to build other positions through the draft. Like, for example, if, say, a Derrick Brown slips in the draft to 13, kind of feel like you got to take him. He's a top five talent in this draft versus taking a guy like Jordan Love or Justin Herbert there. Yeah, it's just depends, really. How do you value a quarterback versus value a top five player in the draft? Do you feel comfortable taking them? As a, you know, I mentioned this to you privately. One of my dream scenario for the Colts is to take somebody like a Derrick Brown at 13 and then trade back up into the back end of round one, early 20s, to get a Jordan Love if he starts to slip. And so I don't think that it's a bad idea to necessarily build the team around Jacoby Brissett. I just think that it would go against what Ballard's preached from the beginning about bringing in competition.
Definitely agree with you there. And I think this is a good final question here as far as the know that goes transitioning into our free agency talk, because it's a free agency question for you, Steven. And he asks, as far as the top free agent targets go, who is one guy that you think the Colts will be pursuing right when the legal tender period opens? And I'll start this one off, Steven. I mean, this is a controversial one, but I love the idea of Jadeveon Clowney with the Colts. I think he's an upgraded version of Jabal Sheard. There's an injury concerns and there's risks there, but you throw in Jadeveon Clowney into this mix. If you draft, let's say, Javon Kinlaw at 13, all the center defensive line goes from below average to above average, or maybe even great at that point. What's your thoughts on Clowney?
I love Jadeveon Clowney. Even though with the injury history, it's obviously concerning. He's missed a bunch of time with injuries. Pure talent. He is arguably the most talented free agent to hit the market in a while. Because you don't see those pass rushers with elite traits hit the market. So once you started that question, my head initially went to Jadeveon Clowney. If we're talking about those big name guys, the same thing could be said for Amari Cooper. If he ends up, depending on what happens with the collective bargaining agreement, whether he's able to hit the market, I could see them pursuing him as well. Cause Chris Ballard has shown that he's willing to spend at wide receiver and defensive end. And so those two guys make a lot of sense to me. If we're looking for another target that I think the Colts will be all in on, that's maybe a not as big of a name, is probably a Javon Hargrave, defensive tackle from Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, Chris Ballard, again, has said that the three technique drives this thing. So he's a guy that I think would be a perfect fit. He's an ascending talent, only 26 years old. That's what I think is the biggest thing. Same to Clowney, by the way. He's 26 as well, and Amari Cooper is 25. So all those guys are young guys, ascending talents, that, you know, Clowney might not get what he was hoping, because he didn't have a great year in Seattle. But is that has to do with what they had him do in Seattle, or is it him as a player? It's one of those things that you kind of hope that they're able to figure out in the free agency process.
Yeah, and I think with Jadeveon Clowney especially, he's a player that I think the Colts should pursue, especially like I mentioned, because I feel like he's so similar to Jabal Sheard, just more impactful than Sheard was. And how would you structure his contract, Steven? Because I feel like he's going to be one that breaks the bank, of course, probably close to $20 million per year. When would you feel comfortable paying Clowney close to $20 million per year? And second off, how would you structure that contract with his injury history? Because I feel like any big contract Clowney signs really only going to be a 2 or 3 year deal guaranteed, and probably some opt-out clauses after that due to injury concerns.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Clowney is going to be in terms of structure is to give him a lot of upfront money, because the Colts currently have a bunch of cap space, as we all know. It's got, what, $86 million right now. They go ahead and put, instead of giving him a large signing bonus, they go and put it all in the front part of that deal. So you get, say, I don't know what the, but say you're looking at, you know, 3 years, $60 million, just for an average on it. They may go ahead and put $25 million in guarantees up front, give them $5 million, $5 or $6 million in a signing bonus. So then you've got $31 million right there, right off the bat. That also goes into your cap versus cash spending. The Colts, I think, need to spend about $43 million to get up to that threshold, the 89% threshold. But the good part about that is you get $25 million of that $60 million off the clock right away. So then you've got another $5 million that is in the signing bonus that gets spread out over 3 years. So that's roughly, you know, 1.875, I think, is right about there per year on that. If you cut him after year one, then you only have like $3 million in dead cap money. I think you're probably going to look at him also getting a portion of year two guaranteed. And so the cap hit won't be huge, but at the same point, you're able to give yourself some flexibility in terms of the contracts and what they do in the future. And that's always been something that Chris Ballard and the Colts have focused on, is to make sure that they pay their guys up front, but it gives them long-term cap flexibility. And so that's my guess, is they give them some guaranteed money, a little bit more than what the average is up front. The signing bonus will be relatively small. They guarantee a portion of that second year, and they'd basically give them an out after a year and a half, or after a year, and then a full out after 2 years.
Steve, we should address the elephant in the room as far as Colts free agency goes now, and that's Philip Rivers. It seems like that smoke's been billowing for months now, since really February, and now we're reaching a point a week away from free agency, less than a week at this point, a few days away, and you have to wonder, is Philip Rivers going to be one of those that the betting odds are all saying that the Colts are the heavy favorites now? Is he going to be like one of the first signs we see in free agency for the Colts, surprisingly enough? Because I know that really goes against what Chris Ballard's saying, but they've never been in this position as far as the quarterback being so in flux before. So, one, Steve, are you in favor of signing Philip Rivers? And two, what would that domino effect do to this roster?
So, Philip Rivers is interesting. I've been trying to pay attention to all the local guys when it comes to hearing rumors about Rivers, because all the national guys at the combine, we all heard it, like Rivers to the Colts. It's a done deal. That's what we're hearing. It's a gut feeling. All of this pejorative language talking about Philip Rivers and the Colts making a lot of sense. To me, I'm not sure about Philip Rivers. I don't think he's a drastic upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. Total QBR last year, Philip Rivers is actually worse than Jacoby Brissett. And so I'm not sold on Philip Rivers being an option for the Colts. I do think the Colts are doing their due diligence on every quarterback. Now, that said, would I be upset if they signed Philip Rivers? No. No, he's still a quality quarterback. And he excels in the intermediate throws, which is kind of the bread and butter of Reich's system. He's a fiery competitor. He's a leader. He's what they sit there and they talk about of what they want in a quarterback. And so it makes sense to sign him if they wanted to go that route. I'm just not convinced they will, because one, he's older. Two, he's not an ascending talent. Three, it's going to cost a whole heck of a lot of money to bring him in. Now, good parts, again, he's only going to be here for a year or two. And he's already said that he wants to play another 2 years max. But yeah, I'm not as sold. You don't hear the local guys talk about it as anything's coming from the Colts regarding Philip Rivers. It's all seems to be national media driven. So it's probably national guys and agents that is really kind of driving that to drive up the price tag for their clients, which they should do. That's their due diligence. They need to make sure that their clients get as much money as possible. I just don't think that Philip Rivers makes a lot of sense for the Colts. Now I might be in a minority there, but again, I just think that they'd be better off sticking with Jacoby Brissett and drafting a young quarterback versus signing a guy like Philip Rivers.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, honestly, I mean, I'm in favor of Rivers because I feel like he's an upgrade over Brissett in the short term. I'm really only in favor of it as well with Rivers. If you go out and draft a quarterback very early in this draft at 13 or even earlier than that, if you want to trade up. But it kind of seems like if the plan this whole time, just hypothetically, Steven, let's say the Colts have their eyes set on a quarterback at 13 or earlier in this draft, like their first pick is going to be a quarterback. Doesn't it make sense, I guess, to just keep Jacoby Brissett in place, not sign Philip Rivers, use that cap space elsewhere for improving your team? Well, and if you go out and do Rivers instead of that, Steven, you will have to trade Jacoby Brissett or cut him, get some dead money on the books, spend that money elsewhere. You don't have to do with Jacoby. So you're kind of putting a little – it feels like you're adding an extra step where you don't have to if that's the plan.
And I think you're right, too. And you think about what, again, what Ballard and them have said from the beginning is that the locker room matters. And so Jacoby Brissett is very well liked in the locker room. He's very well respected in the locker room. If you sign Philip Rivers, you're going to sign him to a deal that's $25, $30 million. And I think that's probably maybe even on the low side of what he's likely to get. So you sign Philip Rivers, and you, if you try to keep Jacoby Brissett, that means you've got $40, $45 million out of a $200 million cap on two quarterbacks that you don't see as a long-term option. I find that hard for them to go with as just kind of a team building aspect of it. I think they'd be far better off to spend that 25, $30 million on signing a guy like a Jadeveon Clowney, for example, in free agency, improve that pass rush. Signing a guy like Malik Collins, the defensive tackle from Dallas. Those two guys together was going to probably equal the same amount of money that you're going to spend on a Philip Rivers. And you're going to improve the defensive line immediately with that. And Philip Rivers, like I said, he's an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. I do think that, but I don't know how much of an upgrade he is. And is he worth the extra money and worth the possible concern you have in that locker room?
Yeah, and then also we should pivot a little bit, Steven, to the defensive tackles you brought up there. Malik Collins is a good name to talk about too, but this defensive tackle class overall is really deep compared to most years. And this is, I think, where Chris Ballard should capitalize and maybe spend his money early on in free agency. Maybe it's Javon Hargrave, a former teammate of Darius Leonard at South Carolina State, who makes a lot of sense. Probably around $13, $14 million per year for him. Shelby Harris also, Malik Collins, others on the list as well. A deep defensive tackle class, Steven. It kind of feels like if there's one position I feel like is guaranteed the Colts are going to address free agency, it's defensive tackle. What do you think?
I really do. I really do think that this is going to be the position that they look at is defensive tackle. I could also see him looking at tight end. If a guy like Austin Hooper is available to them from Atlanta. But the defensive tackle class right now, for the draft itself, you've got a couple guys that are your elite guys in Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw. Then you've got a lot of really good like second tier guys like Ross Blacklock. You've got Justin Matabuki. I don't know if I pronounced that correct at all. The Neville Gallimore is another one in there. You've got a lot of guys in this class. Khalil Davis is another one that's a penetrating defensive tackle. There's another one in there, I think, for Josh Elliott or Jordan Elliott out of Missouri is another guy that is the penetrating defensive tackle that you kind of look for in that three technique that Ballard kind of likes to focus on. And so they could address it in the draft, but I think that this is a position that they're more likely to address in free agency with, say, like we said, a Javon Hargrave. Obviously, like the big fish is Chris Jones, but he's not getting away. And so there's no chance that he's getting out of Kansas City at this point beyond a trade. And I don't see Kansas City wanting to trade their best player to the Indianapolis Colts. But like I said, I think Malik Collins, a Shelby Harris, the defensive tackle from Denver, is another guy that was linked to the Colts early. And so I think that's where they probably go to start free agency. It's almost the one position that I'm really confident they're going to look at addressing in free agency.
I might as well give you the floor for a second, Steven. If you had to put you in the GM seat for a second, you're in Chris Ballard's office for a moment, and you're really have his role. What would you do if you're the Colts this offseason? Because I know we all assume Nick Casanza, his deal is going to get done here once the new CBA is agreed upon, or once the new league year opens, AC is going to be signing a dotted line for another year or two. But outside Casanza, what do you think is going to happen with this Colts team?
I think you're going to see – I think the Colts are going to end up spending a little bit more money than what we've become accustomed to. I think this is the year that they are going to go out and sign a couple of big-name free agents. I think Jadeveon Clowney is kind of the perfect fit in this defense. And I would also look to somebody like an up-and-coming guy like a Javon Hargrave. I think he's going to focus again on the defensive side of the ball. And it's just kind of a gut feeling. If he addressed the offensive side, I can see him going after, like I said, the tight end position, and knowing that right now they've only got Mo Alie-Cox and Jack Doyle really as long-term options. Ross Travis is around too. But I kind of look at that position and say, all right, Frank Reich likes to run two and three tight end sets. I think the Colts were one of the most frequent teams to use that two and three tight end sets last year. Part of that might have been the injuries to the wide receiver position. But in Philadelphia, Frank Reich used a lot of two and three tight end sets. So I could see them addressing that with a guy that's really versatile, like an Austin Hooper or a Hunter Henry, if the Los Angeles Chargers allow him to hit free agency, which it's kind of going the way that they're not going to let him. But we'll see how that all turns out. Other guys that I would target, Amari Cooper doesn't hit the market, a guy that you and I have actually talked about is Nelson Aguilar being a perfect option for the Colts. Young, he's 26 years old. He's got experience in Frank Reich's offense. He performed his best year under Frank Reich, or had his best year under Frank Reich. So he can be an ascending talent. He's got a lot of talent too. And I think would do really, really well in this system. And so that's what I think would likely be the, if I were Chris Ballard and I had all of this money and all this opportunity, I would look to sign Jadeveon Clowney, Javon Hargrave or Malik Collins, one of the two. And then I'd also look to upgrade the tight end position in free agency with an Austin Hooper and maybe a lower level wide receiver and Nelson Aguilar. Because then it puts me in a position that when the draft comes along, I can really take who I think is the best player. And I don't feel pressured to go ahead and take somebody that I'm reaching for. And I don't think Ballard's going to do that anyway. That's not been his MO. He doesn't typically reach. But again, this is the first year that he's going to need a quarterback or look for a long-term quarterback. So you never know. If you're able to fill some of these holes in free agency, though, that's going to open up the entire board for you in terms of the draft. They could take a Henry Ruggs at 13 if they address the quarterback position, for example, and they take a quarterback later in the draft, which they might. Like Jim Irsay made a comment about, you know, not even taking a quarterback in the first round. Jim Irsay is also the worst at smokescreen, so who knows? That might mean that they do plan to take one in the first round. And so they're doing their due diligence on everybody. I think that the most likely scenario, though, is to address some of the bigger holes in free agency, replacing Jabal Sheard. There was a rumor about them looking to sign Eric Berry, safety from Kansas City. He's currently a free agent, so he actually can sign right now if they wanted him to. I think that would be a fantastic move to replace the leadership that they're likely to lose when Jabal Sheard leaves. So then they have Justin Houston and Eric Berry in there to help guide the defensive players and provide that support system.
Let's say here, hypothetically, Stephen, the Colts sign these four names: Jadeveon Clowney, Malik Collins, Nelson Aguilar, and Eric Berry. They also re-sign Anthony Costanzo. How would you grade that free agency period?
Fantastic. Like, even though they don't address like that top tier wide receiver or top tier tight end in that position, I would feel fantastic about that, because you are now increasing the competition there at the defensive end position. You've got a long-term option that regardless of how you feel about Jadeveon Clowney and how he's produced, defenses have to pay attention to him. And so that's something that the Colts have missed. Jabal Sheard, the last half of the year, was not great when it came to pass rushing. And so he was great at doing what he needed to do to contain the run. He would get to the quarterback at times, but he wasn't a guy that you felt you had to double or you had to chip. And so with Jadeveon Clowney, you know he's got those elite traits, and he's shown the ability to be a very competent run defender. So he's not just a guy who is a blur of lightning off the edge. He can be, but he is good enough where he can go and make that run stop if he needed to. And then Malik Collins, like I said, I think that he's a perfect three technique. He's an ascending talent, 24 years old, one of the younger guys you're going to see hit the free agent market. And it just seems like that would be a perfect signing that makes a lot of sense for Chris Ballard. He's got experience in Matt Eberflus's system coming from Dallas. So it's not a matter of this is going to be a whole new situation for him. So that will help with the transition for them. Nelson Aguilar, the same way. He's got experience with Frank Reich, which I think is interesting because three of the four guys have experience with either Frank Reich or Chris Ballard at some point in their careers.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint as far as relationships go. And we've seen it before, like last year, Justin Houston. He seemed like he trusted Chris Ballard the most out of all the teams that are pursuing him. And he signed a dotted line with the Colts here. But Steve, this has been really fun. Appreciate the time, as always, coming on. You guys can follow Steven on Twitter at NiceReadSteve. He does work over on Stampede Blue. He also runs his own podcast called Pod Pancake. Over on Twitter, you guys can follow at Pod Pancake. Appreciate the time, Steven. I know it's going to be crazy here for the Colts here in the next 72 hours once free agency starts.
Yeah, looks like it's a lot of fun. Thanks, Evan, for having me.